are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again on this Tuesday episode. It is a Locked On 49ers mailbag show. All of your questions, well, I'm not going to get to all of them because there's always too many. I do appreciate everybody getting involved in these mailbags. All the questions that get sent in via Twitter or email, you can find that Twitter at BDPeacock. You can email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. You can find everything you need with this podcast at LockedOn49ers.com. All the places to subscribe, which is just about everywhere for this program and all of the shows here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got you covered for Locked On NFL, which I co-host, and all of your favorite teams have a program. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, more NHL shows launching all the time. We've got you covered here on the Locked On Podcast Network, which is why it is your team every day. Let's get into this mailbag, shall we? Let's kick this off with an email from Gotham. He says, "Hey, Brian, love the pod. Please say hi to Leo." I will say hi to little Leo, who's currently napping, and he's probably going to cause some problems at some point before this podcast is over, which is usually how things go. He says, "I want to clear up a few things. One, the tackles. Justin School is not good. The last few weeks, I think you and Nick were saying that our replacement tackles were doing a good job, but I have to respectfully disagree. School and Brunskill are both getting helped schematically, and we're rarely one-on-one versus elite pass rushers, although Brunskill a lot better. Two, E-Man, he's good, but is he better than Akello? E-Man turned out to be a really good replacement, but I did read an article where they showed he was good as pass defense on the outside, but struggled on the inside. Akello, more well-rounded corner. Can you verify? Three, Niners rushing attack is struggling. Kittle and Juszczyk are elite run blockers, and any games they miss, rushing attack is bound to struggle." Let's work backwards here. Number three, I agree with Kittle and Juszczyk out, replacement tackles. It just makes things a lot more difficult. I think everybody healthy, obviously, you could see the 49ers run game be a lot better. And it was better with Kittle back in there. Obviously, the entire offense just works a lot better without Kittle. And I think you see why he is probably the most important person on the football team right now for the 49ers, as witnessed by his play and the entire team's play last week. Number two, Emmanuel Mosley. Yeah, I mean, I think you've got it opposite. I think Mosley's more versatile, and he's good inside and outside, whereas Akello, it's going to be a little bit harder just because he's tall and long-legged, even though he's got really good feet for his length, which is what makes Akello a special athlete. He's got really great feet for a guy who's 6'3". But Akello, it's just going to be hard for a taller player to have two-way goes from guys who are lined up in the slot and play more inside. So Akello outside, Emmanuel Mosley inside is the way to do it if everyone's healthy. And Akello Witherspoon played really well once he got back into the game there after Emmanuel Mosley started the game. So Emmanuel Mosley is basically the number one guy up, whether it's left corner, right corner, slot corner, right now with a full healthy unit on defense. And tackles. Justin School is not as good as Brunskill. I definitely agree, but I think Brunskill has played pretty awesome in And really, for a rookie tackle in Justin School, a sixth-round pick, he's played as good as you could have hoped. He's not peak Joe Staley or anything, but he is fine for what he is, which is a backup tackle. But I think Brunskill has proven that he should be the swing tackle. Brunskill would be the first man up for me, either a left tackle or right tackle. And in fact, Brunskill has graded out really well at Pro Football Focus. And since he's jumped into the lineup, in fact, I think it was PFF Jeff, our friend Jeff Deeney from Pro Football Focus, who we've had on the show numerous times, who we should probably have on the show actually sometime very soon again. I think I've said that a lot about Jeff Deeney. Good dude. And I will verify this right now. I think it was that, and I haven't really looked at much of the advanced stats since that 49ers Sunday night game yet. I've been a little bit busy here, thus a little bit later podcast coming up on Tuesday in the afternoon instead of in the morning. Daniel Brunskill, if I'm not mistaken, has graded as the number 11 offensive tackle in the league since jumping in to the lineup, which is crazy. And yeah, I'm looking at his grades right now. He's actually the second highest graded player on offense for the 49ers, according to Pro Football Focus. So even ahead of the guy he was replacing in Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey, surprisingly. Again, you know, that's their grading scale. You would rather have healthy Staley and healthy McGlinchey in there, but Brunskill's proven he can be that swing tackle. I like him even at guard. I liked what I saw from him in the preseason. He's even gotten better since the regular season started. He's got an 81.4 pass blocking grade, which is best on the team according to PFF. And again, the number two graded offensive player on the 49ers behind George Kittle, who is the number one graded player in the NFL right now with a 94 grade. So fantastic stuff from George Kittle. So important. And Brunskill has done an awesome job stepping in for the 49ers on the offensive line. In an email from Basilio, he just simply asks, do we let Arik Armstead walk in free agency? I say we use the franchise tag on him. He should be in the defensive player of the year conversation. I agree with you, Basilio, that Armstead should be in that defensive player of the year conversation. I don't think he will get it. I think the 49ers as a group have been so good that, you know, if anybody gets awards, it's going to be Robert Saleh rather than the individual parts, which is, I think, a good thing for a team, right? They're just playing so great together as a team. And when you say, man, Armstead's amazing, man, but so is Bosa, so is DeForest Buckner. DJ Jones was awesome in that game. The secondary's been great. Fred Warner's fantastic. So, you know, I think it's all going to go up to Robert Saleh since they played so well as a team. But Armstead in free agency, that's going to be the number one thing the 49ers have to figure out. And with all those other players I mentioned, I just think you can't pay Armstead with his injury history. I mean, don't forget, people were ready to, and I was one of them. I thought, you know, hey, maybe Armstead's the guy that you try to trade last offseason because he can't stay healthy. You have all these other pieces. Maybe you could use that strength on the defensive line to get better somewhere else. And Jimmy Ward's in that same boat. Amazing turnaround and amazing to see how good these players can play with the talent around them and being healthy. Knock on wood for a full season, and hopefully that continues for both Jimmy Ward and Arik Armstead. You'll get probably a third round comp pick back if you don't spend a bunch of money in free agency, and I don't think the Niners are going to be bringing in a bunch of outside free agents, so they should be in a good position to get a comp pick back in the 2021 draft for Arik Armstead, which I think is the best you could do at this point. Maybe you can try to tag and trade him. The 49ers traded for Dee Ford, who was a tag and trade player by the Kansas City Chiefs. So that worked out great for the Chiefs. They got a second rounder instead of a third rounder, potentially, or instead of, and it's not a guarantee you're going to get that comp pick if you sign a bunch of free agents too. So there's a formula for that. And if you do lose a big money free agent, don't sign people, you usually get something back, but you don't always if you sign some other guys and make up for that loss. So maybe a tag and trade. And the defensive end number for a franchise tag is pretty big. And the 49ers don't have that much cap space left, especially if they want to try to re-up George Kittle, if they want to try to re-up DeForest Buckner. And I think that's the decision you have to make right now if you're the 49ers. Who do you sign long-term? Arik Armstead or DeForest Buckner? I think still, even though the year that Armstead's having, Buckner is the guy that would get paid first. Do you try to keep this thing together one more year? Franchise tag Armstead, keep him, and then wait till next offseason to do a deal with DeForest Buckner? Buckner's about to go into his fifth-year option, which will be quite large as well. I don't know if you can fit all those contracts next year and then try to re-sign, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, Jimmy Ward still out there. It's difficult. I think letting Armstead walk is still what ends up happening in the context of everything that the 49ers need to do team-building-wise. And just thank him for the season and be happy that you got that amazing output from Arik Armstead in the last year of his deal, more than making up for that fifth-year option that was kind of iffy coming into the year, right? $9 million or whatever it was for Arik Armstead as a first-round pick in 2015. He was earning $9 million. He's like, man, he's not worth $9 million. And now it's like, oh man, okay, we got surplus value out of Arik Armstead now. Even if he got hurt tomorrow and was out the rest of the year, he was a $9 million player for sure this season for the 49ers. He's been so impactful, 10 sacks now. It's been awesome to see him healthy. It's been awesome to see Jimmy Ward healthy and see these guys play at a level matching up with that first round status. We're finally seeing that talent fun to watch, but some very big decisions to be made in the offseason for the 49ers. Let's hit them tweets. Got a lot of them. More Locked On 49ers mailbag coming up. This episode is brought to you in part by Greg's Tax Service. Honest and straightforward, Greg's Tax Service has been in the business for 25 years. They can help with any number of tax problems, including unfiled returns, back taxes, IRS collection, and audit representation. Find out more at gregstaxservice.com. Every weekend, our favorite gridiron warriors put their skills to the test, so why aren't you doing the same? We're almost halfway through the NFL season, so now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in the game with MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all your favorite pro and college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with the best at MyBookie. If you like to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. Pick your locks for the week, put them together in one parlay bet, and when they all come out together on top, the rewards will be huge. The best part is, if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000 to bet at MyBookie. That's double your initial deposit you can use on all your favorite picks. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON to double your first deposit. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Staying with the theme of defensive linemen, Blake asks, with Moore and Blair out, how important is D Ford's health for the remainder of the season? Yeah, and haven't really talked about it much. It was a surprising development hearing about DeMontre Moore breaking his forearm. He's now on IR and done for the year after getting in there for only one game. And the 49ers were lucky nobody signed him. He looked good. He had, I think, five pressures in that game Sunday night. And it was going to be an important depth piece for the 49ers with Blair out. Now he's done. D Ford's health was already, I think, really important for the 49ers, even more so now. All that great depth on the 49ers defensive line starting to thin out a bit. You still have Armstead. You still have Bosa. Hopefully Ford is able to at least continue to be that part-time player, and he's fine. I love the role the 49ers have had for D Ford this year. Don't practice all year. I don't care. Come in on only passing downs, obvious, you know, third down situations, and go get the quarterback. That's all D Ford needs to do, and he's plenty valuable just doing that for the 49ers defense. They've got some other guys that can go in, you know, Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner and Solomon Thomas and other guys that are bigger ends that can play on running downs. If they can limp him through the season and he can still hunt quarterbacks on a limited basis on Sundays, that's really important for a D Ford and the 49ers. So you hope that that is the case. They can get by without all these guys, but they are starting to get very thin now on the defensive line. Yes, you definitely need, you need D Ford back. The 49ers need to be full strength, especially with some of the teams they got coming up and into the playoffs. Kruger says, prediction question, do you expect the Niners to have a winning December record? Under Shanahan, they were 2-2 last year, 5-0 in 2017, as teams have played a bit better and never let up as the regular season end approaches, would mean a minimum 13 wins if the 49ers have a 500 record the rest of the way. I think they absolutely will. I think the 49ers, they're at 10 wins. Can they win 3 out of 5? The Falcons are a team I think the 49ers can beat and should beat. I think the 49ers should win at least one of the next two with the Baltimore Ravens and the New Orleans Saints. It might come down to that. I mean, they have the Rams on the schedule. That is definitely a winnable game. We've seen the Rams. They are not that team that they had been in the past. Definitely a beatable team there. So that's already three. Then you've got the Week 17 with the Seattle Seahawks. The 49ers should be able to get 3 wins out of the rest of this season, which I think is that's the number. And it's a great point, Kruger, that the 49ers have finished strong under Shanahan, and they've showed no signs of letting up this season. 13 wins would be a great spot for the 49ers to be in, and that should be the goal, is to get to 13. And even if you lose 2 the rest of the way, you're in good shape for potentially having that 1 seed throughout the NFC playoffs. Because these teams are all going to lose. Like, nobody's perfect. Nobody's unbeatable. Even this weekend, the Baltimore Ravens, as good as they've looked, they've lost twice this season. They could lose on any given week. They say any given Sunday for a reason. The 49ers could even potentially not win three games. You know, every team is beatable. It's going to be fun down the stretch. The 49ers have finished strong, and it'll be huge for them if they're able to do it again and get that one seed and home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And they still got to fend off the Seahawks to win the West. I mean, either the Seahawks or the 49ers are going to go on the road if they don't win the West, which is insane to think. You know, those two teams deserve to have home games. They're going to be a wild card and go on the road to a team that potentially, like the Cowboys, that are one game over 500, right? Or 9-7 or whatever they end up being. Got to win the West. Get that home field, man. To Kronzy, pocket quarterbacks seem to be fodder for the 49ers D-line, but mobile, agile quarterbacks seem more problematic. How can the 49ers deal with Lamar? Man, it's scary. Lamar is scary, and he's even more of a problem than we saw as far as his legs go than Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray. One thing I will say is the 49ers have had practice. They've had three games in a row to play against really mobile quarterbacks, and Aaron Rodgers is no slouch last week either. Rushing lanes is important. I saw a really cool thing from the Rams, albeit a blip on the radar because they got pretty much destroyed. Otherwise, there was a Samson Ebukam sack in that game, and he wasn't even rushing the passer when he got that sack. So what the Rams did is they overloaded with the pass rush and the blitz on the left side of the defense, Lamar Jackson's right side. That flushed Jackson out of the pocket to the other side where Ebukam was sitting there more like in a contain, almost like a spy defensive end, and he got the sack. So I love that. Force Lamar Jackson to go the way you want him to go instead of playing passive and sitting back and letting him do whatever he wants. They'll probably try to spy him with different players, maybe Tart, you can't really spy him with a defensive lineman because he's too athletic for those guys. Unless you do like the Rams did on that play and chase him into a player who's waiting for him. Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, those guys would be, I think, the best options for spying Lamar Jackson. But as we saw on Monday Night Football, and we've seen throughout the year from Lamar Jackson, that threat of run really changes the way you play defense, and now all of a sudden you only have three guys in coverage, and Marquise Brown's sitting there wide open. You're thinking, how the hell is that guy wide open in the middle of the field? It's because you have so many eyeballs on Lamar Jackson. So it makes it very difficult. But rushing lanes are key. Trying to contain him and keep him in the pocket, I think, is key. And it's easier said than done. And you have to have a lot of people tight to the line of scrimmage because they can run the ball so well, not only with Lamar Jackson, but with their running backs. I mean, they were killing the Rams. I think it was 7.9 yards per carry for Mark Ingram in that game. Like, they just can run the ball so well, so it opens up a lot on the back end. And Lamar Jackson only completed 15 passes. Five of them were for touchdowns. So it's an efficiency thing there. It's not like five touchdowns, oh, he threw for 400 yards. He threw for like 169 yards. But there's just guys running wide open because you have to pay so much attention to him. You have to contain him with so many players. And he gets time, and he buys more time. And you have to try to stop the run, which the Ravens are really good at. So there's no easy answer there. I'd be getting paid a lot of money if I had answers, but athletic pass rushers, athletic linebackers that can try to run Lamar Jackson down, and the fewer people you can use on defense to stop the running game, I think is a huge key for any team playing against the Ravens, because that gives you more guys in coverage so he doesn't leak out and then find some dude wide open down the field. Oh yeah, I want to get to this one. This one is from Tony, because we haven't had a chance to talk about Frank Gore yet. Where does Frank Gore rank on the 49ers all-time GOAT list? Tough competition, but I think he might be number three. What do you think? Wow, okay. As much as I love Frank Gore, man, you're putting him in there ahead of either Rice, Montana, Young, Ronnie Lott. You can't get into that group, I don't think. Whew, that's a tough one, man. That is a tough one. But I would love to hear some of your answers out there. Where does Frank Gore rank for you on the all-time 49ers GOAT list? I don't think he ranks as high as number three. I think he's a top 10 guy. Very close to the heart is Frank Gore. And I do want to say congrats to Frank Gore for becoming the number three all-time leading NFL rusher, passing Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders, probably my number one favorite all-time non-49ers player. I mean, every Detroit Lions game, as bad as they were was must-see TV anytime Barry Sanders was on the field. So a huge accomplishment for Frank Gore. It took him five more years, obviously, than Barry Sanders to get there. But such a great player, such an underrated player, I think. And he should definitely be wearing a gold jacket. But that's a tough question. I would have to think about that longer. Maybe I'll talk to Nick about that one, because I know he loves Frank Gore as well, on our weekly wink, which is going to be Friday this week, and see where Nick ranks Frank Gore all time for the 49ers. But such a great career for Frank Gore, and congrats. Number three all-time leading rusher. Plays a couple more years, maybe even sneak past Walter Payton, but I think he might have risen about as high as he can in those ranks at number three all-time, which is pretty awesome. More Locked On 49ers mailbag, and what about playoff seeding, which is something with 5 weeks to go, something that we should start paying a little bit more attention to. Long day at work, still stuck at the office. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code Locked On. Are you losing sleep at night over your unfiled tax returns or the large amount you owe the IRS or any other state tax agency? Does it feel like you're trapped and that these tax problems will never go away? Are you worried the IRS will garnish your bank account or your wages? Do you want to be free and put these tax problems behind you? Greg's Tax Service is your local tax resolution specialist. Greg's Tax Service has been in the business for over 25 years and is passionate about helping their clients resolve their tax issues and to get them all the deductions and credits they're entitled to when preparing their tax returns. Call or text Greg's Tax Service at 925-778-4871 to set up an appointment to find out the best options available to free you from your tax problems. Again, that's 925-778-4871. Call or text to set up an appointment, and if you qualify, they can help you settle with the IRS for less than the full amount you owe. Remember, Greg's Tax Service, for all your tax needs, Greg's Tax Service is your local tax advocate, standing up and defending the rights of taxpayers. Find him online at gregstaxservice.com. A good question here about playoff seeding. This is from Owen. He said, what are the tiebreakers for the playoffs if we win one more game and they can't finish worse than the Rams? Who would then be the only team that could catch them for the wild card? I'm optimistic for three more wins, but it would be nice to be in early. Yeah, Owen, it seems like three wins is sort of the magic number right now for the 49ers. I don't think wild card, really, even if the 49ers only win a couple more games, wild card at this point is pretty sewn up for either the Packers or the Minnesota Vikings in the North, whoever doesn't win that division, or the Seahawks or the 49ers in the West, whoever doesn't win that division. I think in the AFC, there's a lot to be decided. In the NFC, things would have to go pretty haywire for those six teams, plus the winner in the East, which looks like it's going to be the Dallas Cowboys, although they aren't playing all that great. They should be playing a lot better. It looks like those are going to be the six teams that get into the playoffs because, like you mentioned, the Rams at 6-5, and then after that, the Bears, the next best team at 5-6. So the Rams would have to go on a crazy run, and somebody would really have to stumble in the NFC North or the NFC West for that sort of seeding to change. Now, the tiebreakers are... It's funny because the NFL draft tiebreakers are completely different from the playoff tiebreakers, which I think is kind of insane. For the NFL draft, it's all about opponents' winning percentage. The 49ers and the Raiders tied a few years ago at 9-10, and they had to do a coin flip, if you remember. And Mike McGlinchey might be playing for the Oakland Raiders right now if they had won that coin flip, but the Niners won the coin flip because their opponents' winning percentage was the same, and that's the tiebreaker after record for the NFL draft. For the playoffs, it's different. It's A, head-to-head, and then B, it is winning percentage against conference opponents, so just NFC opponents on your schedule. So right now, the Bears would win the tiebreaker over, say, the Eagles, even though I don't think either one of those teams is getting in, and also over Carolina because of their winning percentage in conference games, even though those teams haven't played head-to-head themselves. And the Green Bay Packers would win the tiebreaker over the Minnesota Vikings based on head-to-head win percentage. So that's the tiebreaker there between those two teams. And so it'd be the same for the 49ers and whoever they would be up against for that head-to-head win percentage and then conference win percentage. So that's how it's figured out. 49ers, though, control their own destiny, win three games, don't have to worry about it, probably get a bye. And I think all these teams, you know, it's a good chance that they're going to lose some more games. I mean, it would be insane for the 49ers to go 15-1 and the Saints to go, well, it's not really possible because those teams play each other. But you get what I mean. Like, these teams are all going to lose some more games. We saw the Packers lose to the 49ers. Niners and Seahawks play again. Vikings play both the Seahawks and the Packers. The Vikings at 8-3 right now. The Seahawks at 9-2 would be potentially playing on the road, even though there's teams like the Dallas Cowboys who are going to win their division with a worse record. So that's what the seeding looks like in the NFC playoffs. The AFC playoffs is a heck of a lot more wild, and those tiebreakers are much more likely to come into play. And by the way, the only AFC team left on the 49ers schedule is the Baltimore Ravens. If there was a game that hurts the 49ers less to lose, it would be that game against the Ravens, and the still that week 17 game. If you want to win a game the rest of the way, beat the Seahawks week 17, unless the 49ers have already sewn that thing up before that and we see Nick Mullins going in Seattle, which is probably the ideal situation if the 49ers lock up home field by then. Beating the Saints, that's a big one for seeding. If they win out or something like that, they'd probably be resting people. But if not, week 17, much more important, and really every week is more important than this coming game for the 49ers, as good as this game should be. I think the two best teams in the NFL about to square off in week 13. Staying on the playoff theme, a question here from Steve. He says, "Hey, Brian, watching from London at 1:20 in the morning, Monday morning, was harsh, but worth it." Hey, well done, Steve. Congrats. Big ups to you for staying up to the wee hours of the morning to watch that football game. And I got to imagine, yeah, that was worth it. What stadium would be the worst to travel to in an NFC playoff? The home fields for 2019 look likely to be Southern or Domes, except Lambeau. They're all difficult. I think in order, you would least want to go to Seattle. It's just been a rough place for the 49ers, and you don't want the Seahawks to have that seeding. It would mean the Seahawks beat the 49ers in the West also. But then, you know, Lambeau, cold, bad weather. It's always hard to play in New Orleans, but I think I would rather play there than either Lambeau in January or Seattle. So that's how I'd rank them for the 49ers, is the place you would want to least play: Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, Minnesota, then Dallas. Assuming those are the six playoff teams, it looks pretty likely right now. Let's finish this off with Diego, who asks, "Why is Tevin Coleman receiving more snaps than Raheem Mostert? Mostert has more yards per carry and seems to be able to get it to the house just about every snap. A hug from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil." Shout out to all my Brazilian listeners. I know there's quite a few of you out there, and thank you for the question, Diego. I just think that the depth chart is the depth chart, and Coleman's the starter. I love how Raheem Mostert is proving to be a very nice changeup to Tevin Coleman. And I agree with you. I think if I had to go out there and you said, okay, what's the lineup for one series you have to go win the football game, I might put Raheem Mostert out there instead of Tevin Coleman. So I get the question. I would like to have Matt Breed out there before both of them, probably. But Mostert is so explosive, and he's been able to come up with some really big runs. I think ball security is one thing where Mostert has not shined in his career, so you might trust Coleman to carry the load a little bit more there. And I think trust is the big thing with Shanahan, and Coleman's been a pretty good receiver. It's just Coleman is good enough to where and has that trust level with Shanahan that I don't think it's going to change, and Coleman's going to be the guy that's out there the most. But being able to work Raheem Mostert in there is important, and Raheem Mostert is a fantastic special teams player on top of being an explosive runner. And by the way, let's tie this into the last question here I can't find it right now. There was a tweet asking about offensive, defensive, and special teams MVPs. I think offensive MVP, we've already seen how important George Kittle is. So easily for me, George Kittle is the offensive MVP of this football team. On defense, I think Eric Armstead has earned the right to get that, even though Fred Warner's played fantastic. Nick Bosa has been amazing, and I think maybe the most impactful change to the 49ers lineup on the defensive side of the ball. But really, special teams is easily Raheem Mostert. He's probably the best gunner in the NFL right now. He is unreal at that. And it goes unnoticed a lot of times and he doesn't get a lot of credit. So I do want to mention Raheem Mostert. Not only his explosive ability as a running back, which is getting better and better for the 49ers, he's the best gunner in the NFL right now. And he's talked about how he said he wants to be the best gunner ever in the history of the league. Like, that's how much he cares about playing special teams. He's been so good at it. So shout out to Raheem Mostert. I love his development on the offensive side of the ball. He is a dynamic runner with his explosive ability with the ball in his hands and also the best gunner in the league and so important to the 49ers coverage unit. Okay, we'll talk more about the Ravens and meet up with Nick on Friday. No show Thursday. There will be a show Wednesday. Safe travels, everyone. Crossover tomorrow. Ravens, 49ers, Wednesday crossover. And happy holidays.